Welcome to this new edition of Dognostics Podcast, where two ladies and a couple of dogs all hang out and geek out regarding dogs, dog behavior, pet care, and anything else pet professional. Hi, Nikki Tudge here today, just one lady and a dog. Louise is busy in Spain. But I wanted to revisit this topic of harassment, and I think it would be of some value to really drill down and understand what is harassment in the workplace, what type of policies protect harassment in the workplace, what kind of behaviours come under harassment, and if you're being harassed, what can you do about it? So enjoy. Hi. This is Nikki Tudge, and I wanted to spend some time and talk about workplace harassment, or just harassment, but in particular, harassment that takes place at work, whether it's in a corporation, whether it's sort of between peers, whether it's going on at events that you go to. So just in general, harassment that you may experience while you are going about doing your job. So workplace harassment can be based on a variety of factors that differ from one person to another. And some of those factors are things such as race, sex, and disability. Now, harassment in the workplace is not infrequent. It's not an occurrence that's infrequent. Some people experience it over and over. And it is covered by law. So not just being a safety issue, it's also a legal issue. And individuals that either employ people or host events that have people there, or if you're a peer or a mentor or a supervisor, you have responsibilities under the law to make sure that you are not indirectly or directly harassing somebody. So let's talk about the three main actions that constitute harassment. And action number one is when somebody is doing something to somebody else that makes them feel uneasy. So maybe someone's doing something to you that makes you feel uneasy. Number two is when someone is saying something to you that makes you feel uneasy. Or number three, when someone knowingly puts your life at risk in some way. They're all considered key components of harassment. So let's look at the background. Experiencing any sort of uncomfortable situation in the workplace, as I mentioned earlier, is often more than just an offense against an individual. It can be a crime. And it's important that everybody in your organization, everybody that you work with or around, understands that and understands that they need to promote and protect a safe and healthy workplace. And I think that also, I think it's particularly important for small business owners, because maybe you've worked for a large corporation before and you were covered by some sort of corporate protection screen, because within the corporation there were human resource departments and policies and all sorts of education going on in the organization that really stipulated what were appropriate behaviors in the workplace. Or you were at college or school, so again, you're protected. And then one day you go out on your own and you're a small business owner and you start experiencing harassment and you're not really sure what to do about it, because maybe it's just flying below criminal. And you don't have a human resources department. So what do you do? That's a question that I'm hoping I can answer in future podcasts. So even with laws in place, lots of harassment still takes place across the business environment and all environments. But in particular, I'm going to focus on the business environment. So I don't want you to think that because I keep stipulating that, it's because I don't think harassment takes place anywhere else, because of course it does. Now, there are several federal laws that have been enacted to not only protect against harassment, but discrimination as a whole. There was the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which was enacted so employers could not legally hire, promote, or fire someone due to one of the protected categories, which is race, religion, sex, national origin, or color. And this act is enforced with companies that have 15 or more employees. As other laws, and there are other laws that were also imposed by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, which says that if an individual or group is a victim of another's violation of the law, they have the right to file a complaint with the EEOC or pursue other legal action. There is the Age Discrimination Employment Act of 1967, the American with Disabilities Act of 1990. And then there's the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008. And this act may be unfamiliar to some, but still carries a lot of weight. It states that people cannot be unfairly treated in the workplace because of their genetic makeup. In other words, they cannot be discriminated against or harassed because of a predisposition to a disease, whether it's based on history of their family or an actual genetic test. So there are lots of laws that do protect, within a structured environment, harassment and discrimination. So let's look at identifying harassment. The ability to identify harassment may not be as easy as it sounds because there are obvious forms of harassment. So for example, the person's making racial slurs or homophobic remarks. Sometimes it may not be as dramatic, but still considered a form of harassment. The motive behind a statement is often the determining factor of whether or not it's harassment. So for example, the statement "you look great today" can be a compliment if a coworker with whom you feel comfortable makes it. But on the other hand, if a coworker that you don't know or you don't have a good history with makes that type of comment, it could make you uneasy, which could signify harassment. So as dog trainers, we speak about punishment and reinforcement being sort of in the eye of the beholder. And sometimes it's the same with harassment, because again, depending on the relationship you have with somebody, the reinforcement history you have with somebody, or the punishment history, or a history of what you might consider sort of slightly lewd remarks and inappropriate remarks, will determine whether you feel uncomfortable or uneasy. So it really is such a personal thing. I mean, just something as simple as, I remember many years ago in a corporate environment, I was talking to somebody, and it was in a public area hotel, and I leant forwards and sort of put my hand on his shoulder while I spoke to him, and he sort of looked at me and said, "Oh, please don't touch me." And that sort of made me go, "Oh my God," because I am quite a touchy-feely person, I've never had anyone say that to me before. And I felt really bad because I'd obviously felt this individual, I'd obviously made him feel really uncomfortable with my gesture. So for him, that was me doing something that was made him feel uneasy or uncomfortable. So obviously going forth, I then adjusted my approach. I was still very polite, very courteous, didn't in any way impact the respect I had for this individual, but I recognized that as an individual, he wasn't comfortable. And actually, when I started paying attention, I realized that all these colleagues and peers didn't touch him either, whereas amongst themselves, within the group, it was quite a cohesive group who'd worked together for a long time. They were all very sort of slap back, touchy-feely hugs, high fives when they came into work. So obviously, as a senior manager in the organization, that was not something that I had been in tune with. So we have to remember that if we are on the receiving end of something like that, we do somewhat have an obligation to say, "Hey, I'm really not comfortable with that. Can you not do that again?" And once we've done that and put our sort of line in the sand, then that individual has a responsibility to change their behavior. And if they do not, then at that point, we're talking harassment. And one of the things that we always used to teach, and I'm not sure this may have changed now because this is many, many years ago, was that if somebody did something to you in a work environment that was not criminal and that was not completely inappropriate, but was something like, "Hey, babe," or "How you look great today," or sort of slight touch of a shoulder or tactile gestures when you were speaking to somebody, they had an obligation at that point to say, "I'm not comfortable with that." And if that individual did it again, then at that point, if it was reported to human resources, it could become an issue and therefore would lead into counseling and education. So we have to take responsibility as well, that sometimes with certain people, we might be a little bit offended, whereas the sort of the general population or the general sort of data pool of individuals working with that person might not be offended by that. So we have to be really careful and accept responsibility. And sometimes that's not easy. Now, if you work in an organization or you employ staff, then you really do need or should have an anti-harassment policy in the workplace. You need to have a policy that lets all your employees, peers, everybody who you work with know that the company does not tolerate harassment in any way. And it's really important for your business that you have a specific policy that defines harassment. And it has to also explain what can happen as a result of displaying such actions, as well as what individuals need to do if they believe they've been victimized. And then that way, that creates an environment where everybody in the organization understands the rules of the game. It's a level playing field. People know what defines harassment, what type of behavior is appropriate, what isn't, and if somebody you feel has stepped over the line, what they need to do in order to sort of enable education to take place. Now, in general, I always sort of told employers that it's you know, unless you know somebody really well, it's just best not to touch. It's best not to use any kind of profanity. It's best not to use any kind of language that speaks to how somebody looks, whether, you know, in regards to their race, their gender. It's best to stay away from topics such as religion, because what you may feel is a joke could deeply insult somebody. Any kind of policy should outline the process for complaints. I mentioned that. It should also guarantee employees absolute confidentiality. The policy has got to have integrity. If somebody makes a complaint about a colleague, it has to be 100% confidential. You've got to protect those complaints. Otherwise, those complaints will stop coming. And then you'll end up with an environment where people are feeling very disgruntled, very unhappy, maybe harassment going on. There may be all kinds of behavior going on that's just not the type of behavior that is conducive to a very healthy, productive work environment. And you really do not want an organization to reach those points, because it's very difficult to bring it back. And I think as well, what is also really, really important is that irrespective of the position that one holds in a workplace, everybody has a common desire to feel safe. And it's up to the management and the ownership to make sure that that happens. And that means that people have got to feel comfortable telling an owner or a senior manager that something they're doing is not making them feel comfortable. You can, in a normal course of duty as a business owner or an employee or a supervisor, you can have difficult coaching, workplace conversations with people. You can enter into counseling. You can do all kinds of things without harassing somebody or making them feel inadequate or uneasy. You can coach, counsel, educate individuals without making them feel that they are not worthy, or that they're stupid, or that their job's in fear. Now, obviously, with any type of coaching or corrective coaching that takes place in an organization, sometimes that does result in someone losing their job or being demoted. And I think, honestly, if it's done properly, most scenarios can be managed productively. I have been a part of many people who have moved on, moved upwards, been sideways moved, and they felt fairly okay about it because they know the intent is good and it's just not a good match. And generally speaking, if someone's not performing well or not doing well at their job, it often is representative of the fact that they're not in a job that they feel particularly good about either. So more often than not, you can get somebody into the right job where you can tap into their own skills and they'll actually start feeling a lot better about the work they're doing. So I think sometimes companies often use that as an excuse when someone says, well, you know, there's been some harassment going on, and you hear management make comments like, well, no, I've just been counseling them. The two things are completely different, and one should not in any way encroach on making somebody feel uneasy or unsafe. I mean, that's just an absolute no-no. So when you're looking at determining what is necessary for a healthy workplace, you've got to look at, you've got to have a really firm grasp on why a healthy workplace is beneficial, first of all. And if you don't know that or you can't answer that, you need to go do some research, because you have an obligation to your customers and your employees and your contractors to make sure that everybody feels really good about what they're doing. You've got to clearly define your responsibilities of ensuring a safe and healthy workplace. You've got to have a detailed system for implementing a safe work environment. You've got to understand the laws and regulations that govern your business, whether that's county, state, or federal. And obviously, they can be slightly different. You've got to be able to address violations and take corrective action quickly, confidentially, and be able to tap into using the educational resources that you've got or that are available through the federal government or state government to get employees back on track, so that some of these small issues don't manifest into being much bigger and potentially dangerous issues. You've got to also encourage employees, contractors, anyone that works with and around you to be able to give their input safely, productively about how to create and maintain a safe and healthy work environment. And you've got to educate everybody. You've got to make sure that once you have an anti-harassment policy that you develop it, you practice it, and you uphold it. It's not something that just gets shoved into a drawer. So this is why it's important that when you are rolling out these types of policies that you make sure that everybody goes through the training and the training is non-invasive and it's educational and everybody starts to feel really valued. So that sounds like a lot of information, but ultimately we've got to take care of our people. We've got to make sure the people we work with feel safe. We've got to make sure that our behavior doesn't negatively impact other people and is not perceived as any type of harassing. I was talking to someone on the phone the other day, and we were talking about a scenario where they felt they'd been harassed, and we were talking about this particular individual that had been doing it, and this had happened over the course of 2 or 3 years. They'd met this person on several occasions, and we found it fascinating that this individual had told this other individual, the harasser, will say, that the way they were behaving towards them made them feel very uncomfortable, that they were very uneasy. They didn't want to be on their own with this individual. They certainly didn't want to be receiving texts at 2 o'clock in the morning or Facebook messages. And they just wanted to have a very polite and professional standoff relationship. And yet this individual still persisted. And we were trying to inject some humor into this conversation. We were talking about the fact that, let's go back to that individual that I worked with many, many years ago, who, when I sort of lightly touched him on the shoulder as I leant in to talk to him about something in a customer area, let's say, how did I respond to that? I immediately said to myself, okay, that is a behavior that I need to get into check pretty quickly, because this individual is really uncomfortable with that. Not really, but they're uncomfortable with it. Therefore, I have got to modify my behavior around this employee. And actually, it probably would make really good business sense to modify my behavior around all employees, because for the sake of a little bit of tactile behavior towards an employee, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you are indirectly or directly making somebody else feel really, really uncomfortable. Now, that example is nowhere near as extreme as the example that I just mentioned with this other individual. But we were sort of saying, you know, if several people or even one person had mentioned to me that they felt I was stalking them because I was sort of always around them and emailing them and messaging them in an unsolicited manner, I would change my behavior so significantly that person would think I'd fallen off the side of the planet. I mean, we were even sort of joking about how we would travel with, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? We travel with people just to sort of make sure that we were never on our own, that we always behave properly. We'd be so cognizant of not ever wanting anyone to feel like that. So you have to ask the question, if somebody is behaving towards you in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable and you ask them not to do that and they persist, you need to take that very seriously, because that is somebody who A, either doesn't care about how their behavior is making you feel, or B, it is their intent for their behavior to make you feel like that. That is somebody that I would like to suggest is bordering on probably being a little bit of a sociopath. You need to stay away from that individual and make sure that you do not put yourself in a scenario where you feel uncomfortable or, at worst case scenario, unsafe. And if you feel that as a result of that, there are places you can't go to, you need to tell somebody. You should not feel that you cannot go to a workplace function or an event or a public educational environment because you may bump into that individual. And nor is it your job to, when you are there, spend 2 or 3 days slinking along the sides of walls to make sure this person doesn't catch an eye of you. So please, 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 please recognize. You also need to recognize that if you ask somebody to not keep continually reaching out to you, to not make inappropriate comments to you, to not phone you, and they do not stop, you need to contact the police. Because again, you are now dealing with an individual that has decided that irrespective of your request for them not to do that, they are persisting. And I cannot think of a third reason as to why they would not do that, other than they don't care and or it is their intent to make you feel like that. And that is not the kind of person that you want to be tangling with, okay? That's worst case scenario. Lesser types of sort of anti-harassment policies can speak to just scenarios like somebody in a Facebook group using profanity. I use profanity, we all use profanity, but we do it selectively with people that we know are okay with it. I have a couple of girlfriends where I can call them and go, what the? and we all know where that was going. And they laugh because that's the relationship we have. We're sort of sounding board sisters for each other. That's what we do with each other. But there are other people that I would never use that terminology with. My mother, as an example. But it's just not the way I would speak to people in a professional work environment. And if you are in a Facebook group that is being moderated by some type of organization, that's a professional work environment. And that's not an acceptable behavior. So, you know, when you're on social media or in sort of moderated groups and you throw out the F word or even other words, you've got to remember that that just is not appropriate language in a business environment. Now, if you choose to do that on your own Facebook page or Facebook or your own group, not even your own group, but on your own Facebook page, fine. But you do run the risk of being judged because of it. And that's not the voice of an antiquated 50-year-old, because I know lots of people who are younger that still don't like to be around people that use that kind of language because they find it intimidating. They find it offensive. And again, if it's a group that you're moderating or a group that you've put together and you have customers in there or employees, you want to be really careful because you may get away with it. But at some point, somebody's going to raise the issue of you are creating a hostile work environment by speaking like that. It's not appropriate. And at that point, you may have now damaged the relationship with a valued employee and or put yourself into legal jeopardy. Okay? Now, because harassment can carry a wide variety of forms, there should be different anti-harassment policy and statements that explain different types of harassment. So that might be sexual harassment, it might be harassment through discrimination, it might be harassment because you're a supervisor and someone's a subordinate to you. So you've got to address all those different types of angles. And you've also got to look at, and I think this is probably the most important thing that we'll talk about today, is harassment doesn't just cover something that somebody can say verbally. And I think we had a line in one of our policies years ago that said harassment is any visual, verbal, or physical act that is intimidating or threatening. So when we used to do that training for employees in a sort of large Fortune 500 company, we'd have comments like, "What, so I can't give stink eye?" And the answer was, no, you can't. In the workplace, you can't, because somebody else can deem that harassing. Somebody else could be threatened by that. And in a workplace environment, there is no place for that type of behavior. So let's look at offensive actions. So harassing conduct can include any and all the following. So conduct that is offensive may include but not limited to. So let's talk about physical. So actual or threatened assault, including hitting, tripping, kicking, punching, unwanted touching. Remember that scenario I mentioned earlier? Or malicious or insulting gestures. So sticking the finger up at somebody. Yeah? Giving them a really aggressive face. I've experienced scenarios where in the workplace people have made jokes about pulling chairs out underneath people and someone's fallen or half fallen. That would be considered physical harassment. So, you know, I mean, jokes aside, that can be very intimidating to somebody and or result in serious injury. So remember, any physical activity that is intimidating or threatens any type of violence is considered harassment. So let's look at verbal. Unwelcome remarks, jokes, innuendos, taunts, anything that causes offense or embarrassment, name calling, swearing, bullying, expressing or insinuating threats, incessant teasing, wolf whistling, or spreading rumors. These are all, and my God, as I read these out, I'm thinking, oh my God, how often does this happen? How often is somebody at the receiving end of this? How often do you see on social media somebody say something about somebody that you feel pretty sure about? They're not 100% sure of their facts. It's rumor. They're spreading rumors. Or there's an insinuation of threats. Or there's name calling or swearing or bullying. I mean, these are just totally inappropriate types of behaviors. And, you know, when we think about bullying, we tend to think about children. We don't really think about, you know, a workplace bullying. But it happens, that one person at work that everybody's continually taking the mickey out of. And everybody laughs and jokes about it. And nobody stops to think about, how does that individual feel? How is it impacting their mental and emotional welfare? It's just not fair. It's not acceptable. Psychological. These for me are, I mean, these are fascinating in terms of, I just don't think people realize when they do these types of things that this is harassment, shunning somebody, ostracizing, shunning or ostracizing. Think about that sort of group think, that dynamic when people in that sort of a small group shun others or ostracize them. If that's ever happened to you, it can be really emotionally distressing. Stalking. And that could mean just persistent emails or messages that are just not welcome. Staring, gesturing, preventing someone from joining in an activity, damaging or taking another person's property, displaying objectionable materials, graffiti or pictures. This is all psychological harassment. Okay? And then the last one, but no means the least, is the intimidation. The use of physical or organizational power to coerce a person to perform a particular action or to instill a feeling of humiliation or intimidation. And you have to be really careful with this one, because if you mentor people, or you're someone's boss, or you are leading a committee or managing some volunteers, you have to be really careful that you do not use organizational power to coerce somebody, particularly if you're tapping into an individual's vulnerabilities or you understand what those vulnerabilities are. Maybe they're vulnerable to shunning and there's a threat of shunning. Maybe there is some sort of insinuating, offensive or embarrassing type other verbal behavior going on. Because if you look at it, often with these sort of types of harassment cases that we see or we experience in our industry, there's a combination of all of these: physical, verbal, psychological, and intimidation. And I want you just to stop for a minute and just think about the mental damage, the PTSD that can be caused by somebody experiencing all of these things if they are physically threatened. Their physical well-being is threatened through malicious or insulting gestures or actual, you know, verbal threats. If they are constantly being spoken about or having rumors spread about them, or sort of backhanded threats or comments via social media. If they are part of a larger group and a subgroup decides to shun them or ostracize them. These are such damaging behaviors, which is why they're considered harassment, which is why if lines are crossed, it can be considered criminal. And then intimidation, the use of physical or organizational power. An organizational power. And there's also personal power. If you look at all in an organization or a sort of large group, so let's look at the group of dog trainers. You could argue there's a population of dog trainers. And then that then is subdivided between, let's say, educational institutes people have gone to or associations they choose to join. And then within those subgroups, you have other subgroups, which could be maybe a tribe of people that not only are part of this association, but also went to this educational institute. And maybe a subgroup of that is they went to this organizational institute and they're part of this organization and they're also a member of this particular Facebook group. So you've now got these much smaller social dynamic subgroups forming. And maybe if somebody is part of one subgroup but not the other or the third, because maybe they went to this particular educational institution and are part of this association but for some reason are not welcome or feel shunned from this particular Facebook group. That can be really awful for somebody. So I just want to wrap up by saying it's really easy to throw little slogans out like be kind, Be positive. Treat people how you want to be treated. But I want you to sit back and I want you to think about all the small times or little situations in your life. Go back to school, because it's happened to all of us at school, because kids are really cruel to each other, where somebody incessantly teased us or pulled the chair out from underneath us, or maybe forwarded an email that we'd sent to other people going, oh, look at this, or posted something on Facebook that we considered private, or used their positional or personal power because of their personality and their withstanding within a community to put us in a position where we feel coerced. If that's only ever happened to you on the smallest of scales, you know, you lose sleep, you feel worthless. It can impact your self-confidence. It can impact so much of our sort of psychological well-being. And then think about those individuals that are or have experienced that in a more intense manner. And maybe they've had to raise the flags to say, I don't like this, stop it. And it hasn't. And it's grown and become more and more intimidating for them. And then they just don't really know where to go. They don't know where to turn to, because they're not sure if it's criminal, but it certainly is harassing. And they feel there's no way that this individual can be held accountable. So I want you to think about that. And I want you to think about the fact that when somebody reaches out and says to you, I feel that I'm being harassed, I feel I'm being intimidated, I feel I'm on the sort of brunt end of physical, verbal, psychological, or intimidation in terms of harassment, you've got to accept what they're saying, and you've got to understand that it's real to them. Even if in that scenario you would be okay with what was going on, or you'd have a stronger shield or more resilience, because each and every one of us is different and we have to be able to provide support systems for each other. So don't just throw slogans around like be kind or be positive. Throw behavior around that exhibits that you are fair and kind and open, and that you're not going to ostracize people because you have a difference of opinion, and you're not going to threaten them, and you're not going to spread rumors, and you're not going to provide insulting gestures or use, you know, very strong curse words to tell someone to go forth and multiply. And if you're in a position of power, whether it's through your organization or because of your persona and your standings in the industry, don't allow your behavior to make somebody else feel humiliated or intimidated. Just stop and think about how they feel. And if you are on the receiving end of behavior like that, and you have asked somebody to cease and desist and they continue, go and talk to the police, or go and talk to your employer. Don't allow it to continue.